The following episode of Epic Fail is brought to you by Spoke, a new free listening app from SiriusXM.
The following is an at-will presentation.
You want to hear my story about my epic fuck-up?
I really do.
All right, here it goes. When I first started on Broadway.
Nice shot.
And that time, I did get a black eye.
And he starts shaking, but one by one, the cast has to turn towards me.
And my character yells, strut in a circle. And I got the part.
Hey everyone, Jenna Ushkowitz here, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Epic Fail, the podcast where we hear stories from performers about the time they failed on stage, on screen, and on set. For someone who loves to laugh like me, keeping a straight face on stage can be one of the hardest parts of a performance, and from speaking with my friends, I found out I was not alone. Joining me this week, from Broadway's Wicked, Carrie St. Louis. Tony Award winner and starring in the upcoming revival of Carousel, Jessie Mueller. From the Spring Awakening revival on Broadway, Katherine Gallagher. Movie and theater actor, Phil Ettinger. From the Broadway play, Significant Other, Gideon Glick. From the Blue Man Group, Greg Balla. From Matilda on Broadway, Ben Thompson. From Broadway's School of Rock, J. Michael Zygo. From the new movie, The Greatest Showman, Kayala Settle. Star of the upcoming Broadway musical SpongeBob SquarePants, Lily Cooper. Star of the ABC comedy Ugly Betty and currently starring in the play Torch Song, Michael Urie. First up, Carrie St. Louis had a story that had me cracking up.
I break a lot on stage.
Me too.
I'm terrible. I'm the true unprofessional bitch that literally thinks everything is funny on stage. And like people yell, they're like, people are watching you.
Oh my gosh, me too. But then I sound like I'm crying. Because when I'm laughing and trying to sing, it's like,
oh. Oh, you do it when you're singing too?
Oh, always. It's always when I'm singing. I'm like, every rose has its thorn. And it's like, I just can't stop. Also, I mean, I did the show with Rachel Tucker, and she's so good at messing with you on stage, but then not break. She never breaks.
Oh, I hate that.
But I'm the worst. Like, I can't handle it. I want to be able to handle it.
Same.
But I can't. I can't. I mean, one night, so there's this moment right before One Short Day where we go to the Emerald City together, and it's sort of ad-libbed. There's an ad-lib moment where she's like, come with me. And then they sing One Short Day, and I'm like, I've always wanted to come. But there's time where we're like either hugging or excited or talking. And I, for some reason, got nervous that my mic was still on. So I was afraid that my ad-lib was going to be heard.
God forbid.
So instead of just not ad-libbing or just ad-libbing, I sort of did this weird where I tried to say, I can come. And instead I went, because I stopped myself from fully speaking. This sounds so weird. I'm so weird. But I was like, I'm come. And it came out and I was like, oh my God, that was so weird. And of course, Rachel was like, this is the moment. And she looked right back at me and went, you can come. And we both, I mean, it was like, we have a quick change and we were hunched over and our dressers were like, you guys, seriously, like this is a 5 second change. And we were just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And so we came back on stage and like, I couldn't look at her. So
that's
all
the
things we were doing,
recover.
I was just sort of like, we're just two friends. Like, don't laugh. Don't make me laugh. I'm so fragile.
Jessie Mueller is always good at keeping a straight face on stage. But in this next story, she couldn't help herself from losing it.
I was doing a production of Edwin Drood, and there was a scene that was, it was a big dinner table scene. So it was like long dinner table, supposed to be very dramatic. And, but it's a comedy, but the way that the scene was staged, it was a big musical moment too, where it was almost operatic. It was like, this person talks, now this person talks. And we went around the table and everybody said something. But when you weren't saying something, you were supposed to freeze. Well, that alone is usually like trouble. I have a really hard time with freezes, depending on where you're freezing and who you're looking at, because to me that can just be like,
that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. Depending on who you have to look at, like if I usually choose to like freeze, like I don't freeze in someone's eyes because I know I'll be done. So I'm often like looking at the floor, or just like slightly, you know, in between somebody's eyes. But no, there was one point where it came to my, I don't remember what I had to say. It came to my vocal section, and it was also very like, it was very fast. Dun, 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 dun. And I, you know, I'm very wordy. And I said nothing. I just like laughed out air. I said, pretty much. And the person that I was talking to, Andy Carl, who was playing my brother, he was looking at me like, as it was happening, like it was in slow motion. He was like, what? His eyes were like, what are you doing? He was like, keep it together. And I was like, I can't. And everybody else around the table who's supposed to be frozen is just shoulders, just shoulder jiggles.
Next is a story from Catherine Gallagher, who tells us why she was known as the person you couldn't look at within her company of Spring Awakening.
It was actually like known throughout my Spring Awakening company that like if something went wrong, Catherine, you couldn't look at me because it would make me laugh more. Like everybody knew I was the person to be losing my shit. Okay, I'll give you a couple examples.
Please.
So we were the band, which left a lot of room for mistakes on a big scale.
Yeah.
Daniel Stewart, lovely guy, super funny, more accident prone than anyone
really?
I've ever met. And like, I don't feel bad saying this because I say this to his face because some things you just can't deny about a person. Oh my God. Okay, in the graveyard at the end, there are those like bells, right? And so it's octaves. And Stewart plays all the octaves and he gets to the 11th one. And he misses it by a half step.
Oh.
Which makes the most dissonant sound that I could possibly make. I start losing it. My shoulders start shaking. I start
and this
crying.
Is like, this is like also like a very like sad, quiet moment of the show.
Oh
like,
my God, it's
really
the most
quiet
emotional
moment.
Thing. And I'm hyperventilating on stage. And everyone, I'm in the like most upstage, so everyone behind me can see me. So my shoulders are like bouncing up and down like crazy. I have tears coming out of my eyes. Sean is looking at me, so he starts losing shit. Everyone, the last number, we're like, even throughout Purple Summer, we're all like, song of purple. Like, crying. Laughing.
I can't.
Like, I can't keep my shit together. This one
is
was bad. This one was really bad. It was another Stewart fuck up. He's really talented, but he just had these two moments that really got me. Okay, so he was out for like a vocal hemorrhage for like a month, and it was his first show back, and he was playing Word of Your Body Reprise 1, which is in a different key than the other two.
Right.
And it was the only one I didn't play on. He's all alone on stage. Sean sings, and Alex Wise is supposed to join in the harmony. He plays the first chord and realizes he's in the wrong key.
Shit.
So instead of just playing chords that go together, he really tries hard to find what he's supposed to be doing.
Oh, no.
So he plays every chord on the piano. And it's like we get jazzy. We get like weird and like dark and dissonant, like James Blake shit. And like Sean is trying to sing it. So he's like, oh, you're good. Like,
oh,
like not
no.
Money. And everybody is just like signing it. Wise just like doesn't come in. But everybody is like he's panicking because like we're on a Broadway stage doing something so
completely
far
wrong
from what's right. And I mean, when I say that, for that's early on in Act One.
Yeah.
For the rest of the show.
No.
Was like crying. I was like fully, like not, I'm just like, am inappropriate. Finding something funny and not being able to laugh, it makes it so much funnier. Like,
Romeo and Juliet isn't typically a funny play, but in this instance, Phil Ettinger thought otherwise.
When I was in like school, we did Romeo and Juliet, and I played Peter, which is like kind of like the clown of the show. He's like the servant and like has the humor of the show. Like whenever like there's like a really dramatic scene, and they cut him out of a lot of it, but whatever. So I was doing that show. I think I was annoyed anyway that I didn't get to play Romeo or one of the, like you share one of the cool parts. But that it was a fun part actually. But so I remember one show it was the very end of the show, and they both kill themselves and they set it up so Juliet falls on top of Romeo, and the actor who was playing Romeo got into like a coughing fit. So like when they were like doing the final epilogue like of the show, Romeo kept like like his stomach was bouncing up and down, and so she would just kept like she just kept bouncing up and down, and I like totally lost it, like totally lost it, and that's when we're all there, like, you know,
sad.
It's really sad, like, you know what happens.
And Juliet's on a little bouncy.
Like, she's like on like a trampoline.
Next up, Gideon Glick tells us about when having the giggles goes too far. Do you break on stage a lot?
Oh, I am so bad.
Okay, actually, that makes me feel better.
I'm so bad. And there was a point in, I remember it was during tech, we run these lines, and like my character worked at this pizza place called Januzzi's, and we thought the name was just so silly sounding. And so for some reason, we reached an impasse where I couldn't say it without laughing, and we were like teching the scene, and we were really nervous because we were like, it was coming up, and we couldn't move forward. And at first it was like kind of funny and everyone was laughing, and then the director was like, Jason Moore, who did like Pitch Perfect and all those, he is the most wonderful, kind man, but he even had to, like, he'd be like, guys, you need to cut it out. Like, we had to be scolded.
As many of you know, the Blue Men are a silent species, but Greg Valla explains why other cast members sometimes make this impossible.
We kind of egg each other on, in a sense. We joke a lot to kind of warm up and to kind of get in the playful mode. And one day we took it a little far, was because the Blue Men aren't supposed to laugh on stage. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't see them smiling or laughing. I'm the worst. I find most things in life pretty hilarious.
Same.
So when somebody does something to me on stage, I'm the worst. I break all the time. Yeah. I cannot keep it together.
Professional,
exactly. I'm a professional. But one day, so we're wearing these in-ear monitors, right? And what you have in your in-ears, which are, they're basically like molded headphones that you wear, molded earbuds, and they help to simultaneously block out the external sound, so they act like earplugs, but also they give you things like a click track. So you're playing in tempo, little direction track, so you know when to do things at the right time. But that's really all they do. Unless there's an emergency and the stage manager has to say, hey, guys, we need you to exit the stage or something like that. But that's very rare. So you don't expect to hear a voice in your ears. So one day we did a piece called Feast, where we bring a member of the audience up. We go through this ritual where we eat Twinkies and we share a quote unquote a meal with them, and afterwards, and it's all very funny and there's all this comedy that ensues, and afterwards we let them back into the audience and we give her a big arms up, and which is a sign of like thank you, and everybody cheers. And the sound guy, must have been a slow day, decided it would be funny to put something in our in-ears that day just as we released the Feast guest. And I don't know if you've ever seen the film Anchorman.
Mm-hmm.
So we release the Feast guest. We say, you know, arms up, and we say goodbye, and everybody's cheering. And in my ears, I hear, go back to your home on Whore Island. And I
lose
was
it.
Done. I was done. I was it for me for the rest of the show. I was face down to the ground. Burying, like turning upstage, doing everything I could to not look at, and I am just dead. And whenever anybody starts to crack, it then it's like open season. The other guys are like, oh, come on, like what's the matter? What's going on? They just egg you on more and more. So I was the next piece. We're supposed to be playing this very, you know, ritualistic music, and I just have my head buried in the
I wanted to take a few moments to tell you about Spoke, a new listening app from SiriusXM and a partner of Epic Fail. Spoke is more than just a podcast app. It's a social audio platform. You can listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, and more. Have you ever had a difficult time finding a podcast? Well, Spoke has a team of curators, real live humans, not robots, who help you discover your new favorite podcast or show by finding the best moments and highlights and organizing them into thematic playlists. For me, there are so many podcasts that I want to listen to, but it's so overwhelming to start listening to each of them because I have no idea what I'm going to like or what's good. So this is like a friend sharing their playlist with you, allowing you to listen to the best clips from each song. If you like what you hear, you can join the conversation and leave a voice comment. You can also share anything you find on the app with friends or on social media. That's right, hit me on the gram. You can download Spoke from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Go to hearspoke.com/atwill to support Epic Fail or your favorite shows on the At Will Network. Okay, guys, this is coming from someone who has attended a ton of weddings this year. Between all of my friends who've just gotten married and engaged, I have heard some horror stories. I think if you're going to do it, registering should be an enjoyable moment in your planning. Well, Zola is reinventing the whole wedding registry and wedding planning process to make the happiest moment in couples' lives even happier. Their registry is everything you love about your favorite department store and so much more. They carry everything you could ever want in their online store. And listen, if there's a $600 stand mixer, you and all your friends can go in on that together because they have group gifting, which lets multiple guests contribute to the dream gift. Zola is offering a special treat to our listeners, so go to zola.com/epic, E-P-I-C. Use Zola as your registry and they'll gift you $50 towards anything you want in their store. And they carry everything. Again, it's zola.com/epic. Next, Ben Thompson gives us his take on the lighter, or should I say, tighter side of performance mishaps.
There was a situation in American Idiot I was on. I was covering Josh Henry, if that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. Me and a very attractive black man, I cover him. It made sense. But he either left the show when we were in between, it was before Wallace came in or something, I don't know, but I was on for him. I was on for the track Favorite Son, and there's, during American Idiot, I don't know if you saw it or if your listeners have seen it, but side, there's a moment where the favorite son changes into a military costume on stage. The girls dress him, and then he turns around. He's in this, like,
that's
beautiful
right.
military costume. And he's dressed by the girls on stage. So, like, you have no control over what's being put on you.
Right.
And I was on, and the favorite son shirt was preset next to another one of John Gallagher's shirts. Now, John is A, amazing actor, but B, smaller than me.
Tiny.
Smaller than me, yeah. He's a little dude. I mean, and they grabbed his shirt instead of mine. Now, not only is it a different shirt, but the favorite son shirt is designed to put it on. The back is open, so they put it on, so you just hold your hands out. They put it on and Velcro it down the back. John's shirt, normal shirt. So they put, not only is it John's shirt, but it's John's shirt backwards on me. And then I had to put this jacket on. And I'm supposed to do these salutes where they're supposed to be like very, like, you know, like very powerful and like, but no, couldn't do it. Couldn't even put my arms down. And we had to do it like 15 times. It was, yeah, 100%. 100%. And we're sitting there going, it's your favorite son. And like, we're supposed to be doing these things, but favorite son. And like, I'm like short arming it. And I can't straighten my arm and I can't put it down. And of course, the first person out the garage door to walk towards me is Andrew Call. Now, Andrew is, he's like my brother.
Yeah.
And we don't keep a straight face together anyway.
Right.
And he sees me and he starts shaking. But one by one, the cast has to turn towards me. And so they're each seeing me individually.
That's the worst.
And I'm just sitting there like, trying to keep a straight face, but I'm an easy break.
Me too. I'm a very easy break.
Easy break. Yep. I just love life. I have too much fun doing it. You know?
I just like being up there. Yeah. I think easy breaks are people who do love life.
And love what we do.
Not that I'm saying that. For people who don't break.
No, they're just called professionals.
That's fair. That's fair. J. Michael Zygo has a great sense of humor, which is usually a good quality in any person, but in this performance, it ended up working against him.
So during rehearsals, there was one of the ensemble kids. He had a hat with like an S on it. It was like a Stanford or some, I can't remember what college it was from. But I said something to Brandon, who was playing our Glenn. I said, we were talking about the kids, and I was like, oh, the kid with the S hat. He was like, did you just call him an ass hat? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
But
that stuck around.
So that stuck around. And then there's the one moment where Robbie's drunk, or Robbie shows up at Julia's house, and then Glenn and his friends show up drunk, and there's the fight. And Glenn says, "Hey, asshole!" Blah 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 blah. Well, just I was not expecting it. He turns to me and he goes like, "The scene was going so well too. It was like super serious." And he turns to me and he goes, "Hey, asshat!" And I was like, "Oh."
And it's so good.
Yeah, I was lucky I was facing upstage for the better part of that until he punched me. Because he never really did anything like that.
Oh, he did with me. He absolutely did. He every time he had to propose to me, and his back is to the audience during the proposal, and so everybody's singing and standing there, and I'm like have to look real excited. And every time he would bring something else and put it in the box as well, or he would like do something weird with it. So he switched it out and put a mood ring in the box with my engagement ring one night. He put a Care Bear in there. He was really, and every time I would laugh because, you know, that's what you do on stage.
Yeah.
In a professional theater.
Mm-hmm. Prop switching is fun when it's small enough that the audience can't tell what's going on.
Kayala Settle is a hysterical human being, and sometimes performing with her can be a real challenge. Do you break on stage?
Frick.
You're pretty good about it.
Yeah, but there are times when it's awful. You know where it was really bad was in Hands on a Hard Body. It was really bad, not the part where I had to, but there would be moments when one of our castmates, he had the worst farts in the world, and you couldn't hear them.
But they like
they just
so
came
silent
at you like a typhoon. And so you'd stand there and you'd look at him and he would just make this face like, I don't know what you're looking at me for. And so about four people on the back of the truck would face upstage. No one would look at the audience for the whole wherever part of the show it was that he just let it rip.
People would
turn
around.
Oh, yeah. All of us. We spent most of the show looking upstage. Most of the show.
Come on.
And the best was trying to get Keith Carradine to laugh because his hair will fly up and down because his head shakes. It's my favorite. It was my favorite. It is my favorite because it was easy to make him laugh.
Crop dusted.
Oh, yeah.
You were bad at Waitress.
You were bad.
Yeah. My favorite. We were having a really hard day. It was a two-show day.
Two-show day.
And I was trying to get my eyelashes on. I was having like a real problem. And now we shared a dressing room for people who don't know that. So we had a lot of laughs. But I couldn't get my eyelashes on. My glue wasn't working. I was like, fuck it, whatever. I'll get it. So at that point, you were cleaning out your stand because we were about to leave the show. And you found your lashes from opening night.
And, House of Lashes.
They were Arabian Night lashes.
They were thick
as
thick. Oh, they were carpets.
And you decided to put
they
them on for the show.
They were tassels from a carpet.
Now, granted, you know, we're in, not making that much money. These gals from the Midwest, you know, not glamorous, not Broadway stars, no. But we looked like them that day, or at least you did. And as I come on stage, we have our first little look at each other like, ugh, here we are at the diner opening up.
Opening it up.
And you blinked your lashes.
Blink, 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 blink.
And I freaking lost it.
Lily Cooper was born to make people laugh, which has made for some funny memories throughout her career.
I think, one of those people that enjoys breaking other people. So
I
know, I'm bad. I made it my goal in life to break other people. When I was in the ensemble of Wicked, there was a scene called Dancing Through Life where everybody's at this dance and they're dancing with their partners. And I, in the ensemble, I was what they called the wallflower. So I was standing by the wall by myself, sort of like that awkward girl that, like, doesn't have a date at the dance, right? So, of course, I created this, like, ridiculous character, which only the ensemble members on stage who were dancing could really see my choices, quote-unquote choices, that I made every night. And so every night I would do something different where I would be, like, I'd be, like, the teenage girl that like drank too much and would like vomit on the stairs, or I'd be like the one. Or like I'd like try to cut in with a lot of different dance couples, or I would like try to sit down but never be comfortable, so I would just like always awkwardly be moving my body, and the audience couldn't really see me because there were so many people in front of me, but the entire ensemble could, and so it was my goal in life to get them to crack and laugh.
Did it work? Did you?
Oh yeah, it was amazing.
I'm sure it's so amusing. Oh, gosh.
It was so fun.
Did you get in trouble for doing that?
Oh, yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I got in trouble. I pride myself in not, like, I hate getting in trouble.
Same.
I'm such a good girl. I hate getting in trouble. So, you know, you're... you're sort there's like this line that you toe of trying to be funny and fun on stage without being, you know, disrespectful and,
right,
and like, you know, getting in the way of the show and the job that you have. So I may have crossed that line once or twice. And after the show, my stage manager was like, Lily Cooper, can you please come to the stage manager's office?
Ugh, it's always the worst.
Like, oh, God. It feels like going to the principal, mm-hmm. you know? So I go in, and he was really nice. He was like, look, Lil, I know. Sometimes it's boring being in the back in the ensemble. You don't have anything to do. But just, like, try not to, like, speak at full voice in the background of a scene.
Just, like, try like, not to pull focus.
Just try not to pull, make it all about you. and I was like, okay, I'm sorry. And I cut it back. I cut it back after like, that, for sure.
To wrap up this week, Michael Urie tells us one of the funnier moments he remembers from his time on set with co-star Brandon Routh.
I did this sitcom, didn't last, but I did a sitcom with David Krumholtz.
Yeah.
And he made me laugh. When he would mess up, it would make me laugh.
And you did that in front of a live audience?
Yes, and that was in front of a live audience.
I've never done a multicam.
Oh, it's so much fun.
And you break a lot for that.
Yeah, because they love it.
They do love, the audience loves that. We had John Stamos on, and he was saying they used to do that all the time just to make their audiences laugh on Full House.
Yeah. Because also, they expect something.
Right.
They expect a certain...
They're seeing a live taping.
Right. So they expect something to go wrong.
Right.
But they also expect, you know, you do a second take of something, mm-hmm. and they expect it to be the same. So on the show I was on, they would change the jokes for the second take. But so, so like, they are a studio audience. They mm-hmm. know their job. They know when they're supposed to laugh.
Right.
That it's fun to surprise them right. and make them laugh instead of like, and on that show, my boyfriend was played by Brandon Routh, mm-hmm. who was Superman in
yeah.
Superman Returns before the new guy who was Superman. And he had this long speech about a brooch or something, this long line that he had to get through about this like brooch. I think it was a brooch mm-hmm. made out of, I can't remember what it was. But we were standing really close to each other and he was giving this long, very not funny speech about a brooch. And then I think at the end of it, I had a funny line, but he couldn't get through it over and over and over and over. And he couldn't get it. And it was like, it wasn't funny. It wasn't funny that he couldn't get
it.
It was
it,
like,
got
it was like
it.
All right, it's okay. He'll get it. You know, and he was getting frustrated and no, everybody was cool. I mean, it wasn't, right. you know, but he was starting to get frustrated. And finally, I was like, that brooch is kryptonite for you. And he was like a little bit chagrined, you know, like a little like, oh, you did that Superman joke.
He did.
But the audience loved it.
They loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
They were hoping you would do that.
That's the kind of, and I had thought of it like the first time you messed up and I'd been sitting on it. I was like,
you were waiting.
Don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't embarrass him. And then I was like, all right, he's already embarrassed. I might as well.
Here's the one. Here's the one.
A little salt on this one.
That's all for episode 5 of Epic Fail. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to follow at Will Radio and at Jenna Ushkowitz to stay updated with all the latest. I also want to hear your favorite fail from each one of my episodes. So go to my Twitter page to cast your vote now, and the winners will be featured in the final episode we're calling the Epic Fail Awards, chosen by you, the listeners. Next week on Epic Fail.
Makes an actual nosedive directly in front of me onto the front center part of the stage. You hear the entire audience.
Thanks again to our partner, Spoke, SiriusXM's new app that allows you to listen to podcasts, radio programs, and documentaries curated for you. Go to hearspoke.com/@will now.